Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So kids being silly created quite the snarls around the country yesterday. Brooklyn Bridge, Golden Gate Bridge, Detroit, SeaTac Airport, and of course O'Hare, where I'm sure you've seen by now the entrance to Terminal 1 being shut down by this human chain of kids being silly and protesting Genocide Joe and so forth, rallying for Hamas and Hezbollah and the lead state sponsor of terror in this world. That would be Iran. And so people had to get out of their Ubers and their cabs, including some airline personnel, it seems, from their uniforms,
right,
and shimmy up the road to the terminal. But, I mean, it's a small price to pay for this expression of youthful angst. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Remember how we were coming up, you know, this is not going to be the summer of joy, the summer of chaos. I think this is just going to be the summer of hell. I mean, not only did they do that, and by the way, police were standing around for 4 to 5 hours before they made their first arrest. I don't understand that. But then last night, then they took the South Loop and they shut down Adams Street, I think, between Clark and Cermak or something. But then people couldn't get home who were trying to get home after work. The O'Hare thing, they blocked it off about a mile and a half till the first terminal. So people had to walk that far. One lady had her child on her shoulders, lugging her bags. And this is, people
so
have.
What?
What it's like to do this right now?
Terrible.
Yeah. Are you just walking to the airport now?
I'm going to try.
What this is like that you're having to walk right now with your child?
I'm going to be honest.
Don't
this
have
is,
time.
Yeah, this is the last thing we want
to
be doing.
See what it's like to do this right now?
It's crazy. It's Monday. I can't believe I have to do this.
Are you going to try to make your flight?
I am.
You're just going to walk there?
I am. I'm here early enough, so I think I can make it.
What do you think of this?
I understand that people have the freedom to do whatever they want, but when it starts impacting me personally, it's kind of an issue, so.
That's some intrepid reporting there. That's network affiliate newsworthy. What do you think about this? What are you going to do? Walk to the terminal? Yeah, I'm going to walk to the terminal. What do you think I'm going to do?
She's a newbie at Channel 7, but I don't
like it matters.
Well, the last guy said is say, "Oh, is somebody waking up now? You know, you're just going to put up with this? Well, now it's affecting my personal freedom, so now I don't like it." But he's probably a person who voted to put these people in place.
No. First of all, you don't have the freedom to do whatever you want. He's an idiot. But what you saw yesterday, I know this is, we're going to pretend again, we live day by day. We have no institutional memory. We're going to pretend we can't believe this has happened. What's going on? I've never seen this before. Really? You haven't? Are you more than 6 years old? I mean, not intellectually, but actually temporally. It's because we've never seen this before. Really?
Well, they did it in December. And then they did, you know, they just move around. But yesterday was a national day where they, you know, shut down everything.
Yeah. Gosh, have we ever seen that before? Is anybody older than four? Anybody know what I'm talking about or no? Am I the only one who keeps track of what goes on in Chicago from Florida, by the way? Nobody knows what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about, Amy?
Well, they did this in December. They're going to continue to do this.
Who's the they?
the Palestinians in the Soros-sponsored.
Have we seen something like this before?
Yeah, we see it all the time. I'm not shocked that they did it. I just continue to be pissed that the cops are standing there.
Right.
So I have a different angle on it. When people are calling me, how do I get there? I go take 90 to Lee Street, go by Rosemont, go back down to River Road, and get on the blue line and get your butt to O'Hare.
Yeah. So, yeah, right. That's the response. Of course, take the L. Then you don't have to worry about it.
No. We're just, when people are trying to get to the airport, I was just trying to help them out. But it was
wonderful.
Everything was backed up.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember back in 2016 when Chicago State laid off 300 employees and protesters shut down Lakeshore Drive.
Mm-hmm. I remember when they shut down the Dan Ryan in protest of homicide rates on the south side of Chicago.
How about when they shut down the city such that you couldn't get in or out? I don't know, for Black Lives Matter protests, for Mexican Independence Day celebrations.
That's right. You couldn't get to your house.
This happens, the Dan Ryan, Lakeshore Drive, the racial grievance du jour. This is just big city living. This is what is attendant to turning your government and your culture over to tempestuous children, which is what Chicago and the suburbs have chosen to do in Chicagoland. So you'll pardon me again if my well of empathy has run dry. The people that complain about property taxes, taxing them out of their homes, destroying their home equity, their return on investment. The people that complain about mass shootings in back of the yards and an 11-year-old girl is murdered. The people that complain.
I'm sorry, she's 9 years old.
9 years old, and three other prepubescent kids are shot.
Kids in diapers, yes.
Whatever, the kids under 18, and then you'll have NPR Times retrospective with the pictures of all the kids murdered in Chicago, you know, come the end of the year. And what? And what am I supposed to do about it? How am I supposed to feel about it? Bad. I feel bad about it. Therefore, I'm a good person and I'm a good resident of Chicagoland and I'm a good citizen and I'm a great American. This is ridiculous. This is not what I want to do, is walk from Mannheim Road to the Terminal 1 on this day with my kid in tow and so on and so forth.
And then people yesterday say Mayor Daley would have cracked some skulls.
And I'm supposed to care about your hardship yesterday? Why? Let me just answer the question, why? Why am I supposed to get upset about it?
Well, I'd like some law and order, and people pay taxes for public safety.
People pay taxes.
What are we doing here? Why are the cops just staring at them for hours?
What do you mean, why? You don't know why? You don't know why they are?
Side of the road.
You really don't know why they are?
No, I know why they are, because Mayor Johnson, they get stand-down orders.
Yeah, right.
Same with San Francisco, same with New York, because they're blue cities.
Right. Those aren't protesters. Those aren't this is not some act of terrorism, as some people have suggested, because they're our friends. They're your friends. They're the friends that you voted to have as friends. Chicagoland.
Yeah.
So you want me to get all worked up about it? Why? Mark, Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. This is just a warm-up act. Imagine what's going to happen when the convention comes here.
Yeah.
I mean, is Mayor Johnson going to put up with that crap that happened yesterday? What about delegates that need to get in and out of O'Hare? Then will that space be protected? I mean, what they do, they roll up in their cars and they park their cars and all these people that are in their cars get out. And then for some reason, they're bussed from somebody. I don't know who's paying for that. Maybe George Soros. And then they spend all day there at O'Hare. And then when they got busted, then they get out and then they went down to the South Loop.
George in Naperville.
Yeah, Dan, immediately what came to my mind was that Dan Ryan, it looked like a ragtag group, and I'm staring at this thing on TV, and I'm like, they can do that? I mean, to me, that was the start that came, you know, what I thought of.
Yeah, precedents are funny things, aren't they? This is the way we handle it. We've demonstrated it over the last decade. This is the way that we handle protesters that are the fellow travelers of the political ruling class, or the members of the political ruling class that are too afraid to do anything because they're still affiliated with a combine or this specific party, and they certainly don't want to be targeted by these same individuals that are shutting down thoroughfares or airports. And so, of course, you defer. This is what cultural deference looks like. How many manifestations of it do we have to witness in order to really internalize it, really have it resonate? Oh, now I see. Oh, you're inconvenienced in this and that. I don't care. You know why? Because you don't care. You care in the moment, but you don't really care. Because really caring wouldn't be living a life of deference, living a life on your knees, living a life of willful subjugation, living a life of sentimental barbarism. That would be really caring. Being annoyed because you have to walk down the internal roadway into the airport as opposed to be dropped off at the gate at the terminal by your Uber. That's not really caring. So spare me. I don't care because you don't care. Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Hey, good morning, Dave. This is just another example of them bullying themselves into something and taking over and no one really giving a darn, just like women's sports where they're taking over. Men are bouncing volleyballs off of women's faces and breaking them to pieces. And no one seems to care. Everyone says, oh, well, it's not this whole thing's getting out of hand and no one seems to give a darn. Where the heck are the men, as you guys say? Who's in control? What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, I love what Senator Tom Cotton said yesterday. Take matters into your own hands. Do something, because cops won't.
If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas, and I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
Well, I don't think you want to be throwing people off the Golden Gate or the Brooklyn Bridge, with all due respect for Tom Cotton. I don't think that's the response is, yeah, have a bunch of guys pick them up and move them to the side of the road.
Yeah, can do that.
Oh, sure.
Or can you just not touch these little dainty flowers?
Well, that may be, arguably an offense. But I think that's a rather modest risk to take in order to institute some discipline. So I certainly would be party to that. And let's not be talking about throwing people off bridges. That's sort of what they're in the business of as they promote terrorism and state sponsors of terror. Actually, good piece from our friend Brendan O'Neill at Spiked, too, if you actually want to look at who these people are. And you should pay attention to them because, you know, you are paying their student loans off. So, I mean, the least you could do is pay attention to them. How quickly the Ceasefire Now lobby turned into frothing warmongers. No sooner had Iran begun its criminal bombardment of Israel than these phony peaceniks were leaping up and down with delight. This is true solidarity, said one pro-Palestine group, quote-unquote pro-Palestine, in response to Iran's raining down of missiles on the Jewish state. We can now glimpse the truth behind their fake pacifism. We can see their yearning for war in Israel that they cynically dress up as a campaign for peace in Palestine. It's not a ceasefire that woke Westerners want. It's the humiliation and taming of the Jewish nation and, frankly, eradication in many cases. Yeah, I'm pretty clear on their death to Israel, death to America chanting, aren't you?
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So day one of the Trump trial in Manhattan. Jury selection began, but really didn't get very far other than dismissing most of the prospective jurors for their admission that they were too biased to judge Trump impartially.
So maybe he was right when they said they requested to move the trial to a different county. I mean, you think they're going to get a fair and impartial jury there? There's no way.
No, but they're going to get a jury.
Yeah.
And right. they're going to be enough Trump haters that will effectively lie and say they can judge the matter impartially to get on the jury. You can be sure of that. Here's what Trump had to say on day one.
It's a scam trial. If you read all of the legal pundits, all of the legal scholars today, there's not one that I see that said this is a case that should be brought or tried. It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt. It continues, and it continues forever. And we're not going to be given a fair trial. It's a very, very sad thing.
He went on to, so that's customary. He's staying on message. It's a scam trial and it constitutes election interference. Those are basically the two prongs of what he's been saying for months.
So I just want to thank you very much, but that I can't go to my son's graduation, or that I can't go to the United States Supreme Court, that I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina campaigning like I should be, it's perfect for the radical left Democrats. That's exactly what they want. This is about election interference. That's all it's about. Thank you very much.
And so,
yeah, and he said that because the judge said you have to be in court every day, and he asked for some exemptions, like, "Hey, I want to go to Barron's graduation." No.
Did the judge rule on that? He asked for the judge not to hold trial on Friday, May 17th, to attend that graduation, high school graduation for Barron. I don't think the judge immediately ruled on that.
All right. Well, he did tell him if he missed a day, he could be held in contempt.
Well, yes, generally speaking, but there was a specific ask for that day. So, I mean, if the judge otherwise says court is in session, then he needs to be there because it's a criminal trial, or he can be, he can be imprisoned. Yeah. The DA also urged this hopelessly conflicted judge to fine Trump $3,000 for violating the court's gag order because he called Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels sleazebags on social media.
Which they are.
Right.
But he doesn't have a right to free speech.
Right. The great irony. The irony's abound here.
Yeah.
None other than currently jailed former Stormy Daniels attorney Michael Avenatti, professional fraudster, and one-time presidential candidate, one-time darling of Fredo Cuomo and CNN.
And The View, they were like, oh, and they're fawning all over him, Dan. Like,
oh, yeah.
You should run for president.
He was an it girl for the for a moment there, and then he went to prison for defrauding clients.
That's meow.
So Avenatti from jail, he did an interview on MSNBC last week, actually suggesting that this trial is not a trial that should be happening. I mean, not that I'm going to call Michael Avenatti as a character witness or even a legal expert at this point, but it's just sort of ironies abounding. That's about the extent of it. Mm-hmm. He also said that it's rather curious that Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, they can be doing interviews all over the place talking about their views on the substance of the matter at bar in this case, and Trump cannot. They can call Trump names, they can characterize him in this way and that way, but the reverse isn't true. And that's Michael Avenatti, CNN, The View, cause celeb at one time, making that case. Very interesting.
And did you see the Stormy Daniels piece that she did? She did a, you know, why I did it, why I had to have sex with Trump, because she's from the South, and he was standing before her, and as a Southern woman, you have to please the man. Like, what is she doing?
Right.
This is all just so hyperbole.
She's watched Gone with the Wind one too many times. As a Southern lady, because that's how Stormy Daniels strikes me. By the way, as we talked about this yesterday, and Maria Bartiromo mentioned it on her show on Sunday on Fox Business, you know, Stormy Daniels has had differing accounts of the supposed affair as well. And she said it happened after she said it didn't happen, and I never received any money. So, I mean, it's the same thing with Michael Cohen, serial perjurer. Were you lying then or are you lying now? Reasonable doubt, remember, is the standard in a criminal trial, not preponderance of the evidence. I mean, I'm just saying, not that these standards mean anything when you have a criminal justice system that is completely violating all the basic tenets of the vision of our justice system, Lady Justice being blind and all. No, her eyes are wide open when it comes to Trump.
312-642-5600,
turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. John Yu, who is a law professor at Berkeley, friend of the show, he had this to say, particularly on the jury pool, since really this is Trump's one hope, if he's going to have one, which is, as we've been saying for months, is there one Manhattanite, regardless of their view on Trump, who will say, I'm not going to go along with this Star Chamber proceeding and I'm going to vote to acquit, such that at minimum the jury is hung and no case is, and that case wouldn't, then there's no way it would be retried before the November 5th election. So that's basically the possibility that he gets one or two holdouts. I don't really see the prospect of an acquittal on the merits, sure. But with the Manhattan electorate, that would be like expecting an acquittal in Cook County. What do you think? Probably not. John Yu on the jury pool.
I think it's pretty extraordinary for, in the very first jury pool, before you interview anybody, half of the jury pool already says they're so biased against President Trump that they can't serve on the jury. Hmm. This is what we call voir dire, where the lawyers and the judges ask questions of the potential jurors to ferret out any bias. Before we even get to do that, half the jury pool already says they're fully biased. That's only going to feed into, I think, Donald Trump's claim that the public integrity of the courts and the prosecutors is to be questioned as being biased and unfair against them.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, really. I wish this case was more interesting and complicated than it is, but it's not. I mean, it's borderline Soviet. It's a show trial to give people something to hang on to say, oh, he had his day in court. And as you will hear the left say ad nauseum, no person is above the law, not even a former president, because they are the true guarantors of equal justice under the law, of equal protection, right? Of due process, and both procedural and substantive. You'll hear some of their legal propagandists like a Jamie Raskin or an Adam Schiff say, no person is above the law. Every person is entitled to their day in court, and he had his day in court, and he was judged by a jury of his peers, and so on and so forth. So I go back to say, scam, election interference, all good, but I still think Trump is missing a piece. And it's that piece that we just referenced by saying, look, it's a scam. It's election interference. Well, if it's a scam and an election interference, then it logically follows that you're convicted before the jury is selected. And I don't think there's any issue with him saying that. I think he should say that. So here's what's going to happen, America. Okay. I'm going to be convicted by this kangaroo court that the judge and the prosecutors have wired up and are wiring up, you know, all of the pieces to present this facade of a criminal trial, but it's just a facade. So absent the individual or a couple of individuals in New York who may not like me, but do like our justice system, do not like to see people railroaded, do not like to sort of watch people use the justice system as the ends to justify their means. Absent that happening, I'm going to be convicted, and that needs to be immediately dismissed in your mind with respect to this election, because we'll appeal and ultimately we're going to win on appeal on the substance when we get to a court that is actually interested in the rule of law. But the one we're in now, that is not that court. Right, so just prepare for the conviction. Keep it in the proper context, which I'm providing here, so that depending on how long it takes to appeal it, again, absent a one or two heroic people that somehow managed to get on the jury, you keep that in mind as you think about the future of this country and the choice that you'll make on November 5th. I still think he needs to complete that thought, and I don't think he's done it yet.
Do you think on advice of his lawyers he's not doing that, or one of his campaign managers, that he's not saying what is so obvious?
Do you think his lawyers advised him to call Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels sleazebags on Truth Social?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure they would probably tell him to sit that one out.
I don't think, I mean, he this is well within the parameters of the gag order, even to make a comment on the court or the proceeding, the case against him. He can do that. It's all of a very personal nature, you know, quote unquote, trying to influence the jury. Now, you know, they could argue about the interpreting the gag order and so on and so forth. But look, you know, slap my hands, fine me $1,000, whatever, put me in jail. That's all the better.
Oh, yeah.
On a contempt charge. But it got out there.
Right. Well,
it got out there and then people discuss it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The judge didn't want him saying any disparaging remarks about the witnesses who are going to testify in this trial.
Right. So make the commentary global and political in nature. Now you're curtailing political speech, because I'm talking about this in the context of the election, which is how people are processing it. So go ahead, judge. I mean, you're conflicted anyway. This is wired against me anyway. So go ahead and do your worst. Go ahead and fine me. Go ahead and imprison me, whatever. I mean, all you're doing is illustrating the truth of what I'm saying. So keep illustrating it. Meanwhile, he just makes Trump's argument, the argument that I've suggested he make, more persuasive if he's punished for making that argument, which is an absolutely legitimate case to offer the public. I mean, you can't look at this in a silo. This is the legal proceeding. And yes, it's against the backdrop of the election, but we got to keep it narrowly tailored to the legal proceeding. Nobody thinks like that. No way. So, just make that case. I mean, I know he gets stuck on his stuck. Yeah, he's very conventional in the sense that when he gets a hold of a couple of talking points, he sticks with them. Scam and election interference. Not bad. But incomplete is my argument. So, you know, as the trial proceeds, we'll see if he offers more comprehensive commentary. If he can stay awake, too, because did you see the accusation by Maggie Haberman, New York Times, that he was falling asleep? Who wouldn't be falling asleep?
As a reporter, I have fallen asleep many times in trials, especially during jury selection. I mean, there's times where it's really mundane, and it's a long time to be sitting, especially for somebody like him who's active. You know, he's probably dreaming of golfing, thinking about the Masters results. I mean, who knows? But this case, this was a misdemeanor, and then they changed the rules again. And again, there's no victim in this case either.
Right. No victims. Ugh. Right. That's the parallel to the Trump case, again, the case against Trump Organization, the civil case that Letitia James brought. no victims. Now, they're sort of victims after the fact, you know, because Stormy Daniels is sort of claiming to be one, but that was after she claimed she wasn't.
Right.
So how credible is that? That's a case that you want to bring to trial as a prosecutor? No. But it's a case you want to bring to trial because it's a former president that your constituents despise, and this is an opportunity for you to raise your profile and advance your career. Sure. Well, that's the motivation for Alvin Bragg. Could that be any more obvious? Everything about this is obvious if you're looking. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Got a couple of programming notes need to get to. Friends in our listening audience. John in Bridgeport. You know John from Bridgeport? He's the guy who has the war room in his basement. We had the bet about the mayoral election. He lost. John in Bridgeport. Anyway, I got a word from a friend of his. His father passed away Thursday night. The funeral was today, which was yesterday. And so we just wanted to extend our condolences to John from Bridgeport on the loss of his father. That's one. I had a birthday I forgot to acknowledge.
Uh-oh.
Last month. And it's a big one. And where is it? I made a note to myself. Oh, here it is. There we go. Okay. Mickey Noonan. Mickey Noonan celebrated her 95th birthday on March 14th.
Yay!
She is a big fan of the show.
Okay.
We are one of her valued activities, as is appropriate. This is wisdom, the wisdom that comes with age.
Good for her, because it's important to stay active.
Yeah. All right. So happy 95th birthday. Sorry it's belated, Mickey Noonan.
Mickey
and we appreciate you listening. Okay.
And you have all a birthday coming up. Birthdays for some reason. I am really. Are you the 19th?
No, I'm not the 19th. But it doesn't matter. I'm not 95.
God. Okay.
Nobody cares, including me. First and foremost, me.
Can you help a sister out?
No.
Because it's not on Facebook either, so I don't know.
I don't like to make a spectacle of myself. Hey, it's my birthday. I mean, where's that Greg Giraldo? But it's my birthday, Rib. Hey, but come on, it's my birthday.
But it's my birthday. Can we find that?
No, the Greg Giraldo riff on birthdays is so good.
It's classic.
All right, we'll get it.
We'll play that on your birthday when I ask our program manager, Marcus Brown knows when it is, because we had a roast for you when you turned 50.
I remember that. Yeah.
That was the most frightening I've ever been to speak in public, but I think I nailed it pretty well.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Thousands of people there.
Very mean-spirited.
Oh, very.
A lot of vitriol that evening, but that's fine. I can take it.
It was cathartic for me and Jeannie Ives.
I'm a big boy. I turned 50. My birthday. Here it is.
Now, when did we become such a nation of such self-important, narcissistic douchebags that, you know, when it's your birthday now, you just think you can go to any restaurant and make the waiters sing happy birthday to you? When did that trend start? That's the most irritating. That used to be for children at Chuck E. Cheese. Now you can go to any restaurant. It's my birthday. Dance around or something. Give us a little song, would you? Give us a little song. Go get me a piece of cake. It's my birthday. You go to restaurants now, they got to break out in song every 5 minutes. I was in a restaurant the other day. The waiters had to go out 4 separate times to different tables and sing happy birthday. And holy the owner comes out and even the dishwasher's out there singing. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. It's my birthday too, but no one's singing happy birthday to me because I'm in the back washing dishes for 50 cents an hour, but somehow I'm the bad guy for taking away American jobs. What f***ing job am I taking away? Who wants to wash a f***ing dish for 50 cents an hour? Okay, yes, arguably all of us coming over like this collectively lowers the labor rates in the country. We could debate it on those merits, but no, you're taking my job, you're taking my job, you're taking my job. What kind of fucking ignorant bullshit is that? You have to ask yourself, are you willing to pay the increased cost of paying a prevailing wage for some fucking slob to stand back there washing dishes? If it's such a fucking problem, why don't you just penalize the employers who hire us? Oh, because that will be politically unpopular. How old are you now?
The late, great Greg Giraldo. So good. Yeah.
Hey, dance around or something. It's my birthday.
So good. All right. Enough of our sort of hip and cool version of the Willard Scott routine.
Your birthday's April 29th.
Thank you. I almost forgot.
We'll come out from the back and sing happy birthday.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, dance around. Give me a piece of cake or something. Yeah, it's my birthday.
All right, we have to get to this other matter because there's a big meeting in Downers Grove tonight. 7 o'clock. Be there.
Okay.
801 Burlington Avenue in Downers Grove. This is the day that the Lord has made for Downers Grove Marxist to try to purge William Nineberg from the library board. What are his offenses? They are numerous.
Is there a victim in this crime?
It's not hush money. Okay. No, it's not a hush money matter. It's even worse.
Oh, God.
William Nineberg has declined to put his preferred pronouns on the library's website.
Oh, my beating heart.
Can you imagine? William Nineberg is threatening to make Downers Grove a non-welcoming community. Not trans-affirming. Could you imagine? Nobody wants to live in that Downers Grove. The resolution approved the removal of William Nineberg from the Library Board of Trustees for his crimes against humanity. I added the last part, but I think it's implied. Nineberg has criticized fellow board members for no longer saying the Pledge of Allegiance before every meeting.
That's
one of his offenses.
They should always say the Pledge of Allegiance before the board meeting.
Okay. He has criticized them for demanding a native land statement before, as just attendant to the library's existence. Native land statement, of course, white Christian men murdered and stole the land of Downers Grove from the noble savages. Something to that effect. He also, among his many crimes against sentimental barbarism in Downers Grove, he publicly opposed. Could you imagine a public official taking a public position on a matter of the expenditure of funds
for
a public unit of government? You know, for a unit of government, which is by definition public. He opposed the library spent publicly. The library spending $157,000 on anti-racist consulting.
Anti-racist? Okay.
Yeah, you know, the typical, the dye stuff.
Anti-racist consulting. Okay, all right.
He also opposed the library's backing of drag queen bingo, which event, you know, featuring transvestite strippers for kids.
And when are you supposed to yell in a library? I thought we were supposed to be quiet.
On the end of February, Democrat Socialist Library Board members Swapna Jagani, Carissa Doherty, David Humphreys, Barnelli Huntia, and Marty Sladek voted 5-0 to censure Nienberg. But a censure isn't enough in this case. The offenses that I've listed, is a censure appropriate punishment? Is that proportional? No, it's not. They asked the Downers Grove Village Council to remove him. Remove this man.
Security.
From the board completely. And last month, the Downers Grove Village Council, the village elders, voted 4-3 to put the resolution up for a vote. That includes the new Marxist members of the Downers Grove Village Council, because that's a new Marxist community now. I don't know if you knew. Leslie Sadowski, Greg Hose, Chris Gilmartin, and Mike Davenport passed the pea hats around to those male impersonators. And Leslie Sadowski, I don't know. Maybe she's a woman. I don't want to assume any identity. I don't want to be censured by the Downers Grove Village Council.
He, her, him, them pronouns, please.
So they voted to move that forward. That's a 4-vote majority. Martin Tully, Danny Glover loved him in Lethal Weapon. And the mayor, Bob Barnett, voted against it, but they're outgunned. Leslie Sadowski, by the way, one of the members of the Downers Grove Village Council, the village elders. She was the proponent of the male strippers pretending to be women for the kids program. She was dubbed Jussie Sadowski because she posted a letter she claimed was from sympathizers of the U.S. Confederacy that were angry about the drag queen bingo night she supported at the library. Yeah, those relatives of Robert E. Lee. Very concerned about what's happening at the Downers Grove Library. We're under attack by Confederates.
When they said they got death threats doing it, Confederates were writing letters. Please.
Confederates.
We got a Title IX write-up because
that's great.
Because even discussing the drag queen bingo at Downers Grove, somebody was listening to the show and said I was threatening children.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. They spent 19 hours listening to the station just to prove... No, so they took time away from other real investigations. You know, kids are getting raped at CPS, and they spent 19 hours listening to this show, only to come up with the conclusion that I did not threaten any children ever, and it was whatever.
Yeah, you're threatening children, stupid. But the self-described raunchy stripper Tyler Tai Reviglio, a 31-year-old stylist from Peru, that's in LaSalle County, that Peru, not South not, America, okay. Peru. This dude was going to get into a stripper's get up and then gyrate in front of the kids. That's not threatening children. Of course not.
No.
Because Reviglio performs in bars in Chicago's Boys Town. So, I mean, he's a professional.
Right.
He was, going to do so at the Downers Grove Library under the stage name Aurora Divine. He's so many characters and it's so much fun.
Why would they even, like, that's sick that they even would want to take a gig like that.
So
for the children, gross.
But you know, here's the thing. This is a predominantly honky library board, although not completely. And you know, it's bad enough to have honkies on the library board. But if you've got a honky that is not going to post his pronouns, his preferred pronouns, you got a honky that's going to oppose some $167,000 expenditure for, you know, race hustle indoctrination. You got a honky that's going to oppose somebody like Tai Reviglio dressing up as a stripper to gyrate in front of kids and play some bingo. I mean, that's the honky you can't tolerate.
That's a honky we can't have.
That's a honky you cannot have that honky.
Remove the honky.
Remove that honky!
Security.
Mm-hmm. All right, so
William.
What's it going to be, Downers Grove? Are you going to allow an interloping honky like William Nienberg to continue to sit on this library board?
It's the library board, Mike.
Noel in Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan and Amy.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on. Go ahead, Noel.
Oh, yeah. You guys really nailed it on the head here. I mean, it's just nuts in Downers Grove. The library is so woke.
Pun intended.
That they can't tolerate a diverse opinion. And Bill Nyberg has been nothing but doing his fiduciary duty with respect to his job at the library as a trustee. You know, he asks tough questions, and he expects reasonable answers, and all he gets is stonewalling and all this racist nonsense.
But Noel, I mean, with all due respect, he wants board members to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
I used to do that every day in school. Every morning, rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
It's
absurd.
Oppressive. It's oppressive. Can't he just join them in a ritual burning of the American flag to kick off library board meetings like a good Downers Grovian?
Yes, and then we can all sing the praises of the dear leader.
Yes, right.
What the heck happened at Downers Grove?
Wow. Yeah, well, there's a lot of communities are saying that. Yeah. So what? How does this play out? It sounds like William Nyberg and some of the board of the village council members are outnumbered and outgunned. Are there any sensible residents not named those three village council members or Bill Nyberg or Noel left in Downers Grove?
Well, in the village council, I know the mayor, Bob Barnett, Martin Tully, and Danny Glover are supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
And the other four remaining, Leslie Sadowski, she's kind of leading the charge on this.
I bet.
His removal. And she's being followed by Mike Davenport, who refuses to meet with Bill to even discuss what he's been doing in the library for the past 2 years.
Is Mike Davenport also a trans stripper by any chance?
Yeah. I don't know what he does in his off time, but.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's always a surprise, you know. See how surprised United Airlines was. Yeah. All right. Well, so the meetings tonight. I mean, are residents surprised of this? I mean, hopefully some of them are now, but yeah, are people going to speak out on behalf of Nyberg and against these neo-Marxists?
Oh yeah, we're going to have a nice crowd showing up tonight, and we're going to have a good lineup of speakers in support of Bill. And just to give you a perspective of how petty these folks are.
Oh, I think we're getting perspective on it, but yeah, go ahead.
They during the initial censure back in February in the library, one of the board members, Carissa Doherty, actually mentioned that Bill did not have a library card. Well, as it turns out, he actually does have a library card. We've got photographic evidence of it.
Oh my goodness!
But I mentioned that, well, you know, you're in violation of the Illinois Library Records Confidentiality Act. They doubled down on it, and they kept talking about his library card at the next board meeting. So I decided to take him up on it, and I FOIA'd the library for all the names of anyone who holds a library card over the age of 18. And they gave me a list of 28,000 names.
Oh, my gosh.
So to test it further, I went to the Westmont Library, the Hinsdale Library, the Oak Brook Library, and the Indian Prairie District Library, and made the same request, and they all denied me.
Once upon a time in this country, we would reminisce about, the Union victory at Vicksburg. Now it's the great library, the battle for the Downers Grove Library. And whether or not William Nyberg has a library card. Are you a library card holder in good standing, sir?
Do you have any overdue books? That's what they'll go after next.
Yeah, right. You know? I mean,
do you know the Dewey Deuce decimal system?
Yeah. No, I don't have a library card because I have the internet at home and an Amazon account.
Well, Noel, anyway. Call tomorrow. And if you can record any of the meeting, that'd be great, too. But we'll probably do a follow-up tomorrow, don't you think, Dan?
Sure. I mean, right.
We
may be
William Nyberg.
Remembering William Nyberg tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Does he stay or does he go?
I mean, what? Not just does he go, but I assume there's some sort of there'll be some sort of, you know, torch holding, pitchfork throwing mob there with their preferred pronouns on their sleeves to impose, you know, street justice on William Nineberg for his many transgressions that we've documented.
Oh yeah, well, the library black shirts will be there with their masks.
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, masks.
Save one life if it saves a life.
Yeah, be safe.
We've got measles now too, so you can't be too safe.
All right, Noel, thanks for the perspective and appreciate that. I think you should be able to, as a library board, I think you should be able to, and a village council, revoke people's residency as well. Oh, you should be able to send William Nineberg out of town on a rail, right? Mm-hmm. Because they do have a train station there. Yeah. Yeah. Banish him. Yeah. Banish him from the community. I mean, even
tar
if he's...
and feather him in the town square.
If he's deposed from the library board, he's still there. He still presents a public threat to the pronoun posse. Bill, the Northwest Suburbs.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of Downers Grove, I've been dealing with the staff at Downers Grove South for about 6 weeks. My son was bullied by a certain individual that he knows. 4 weeks later, my son received a phone call from this vile child who called him by name, told him he was a faggot, told him he wanted to spooge on his face, bend him over, it was that vile. But here's what, so the school's report was told, they removed this vile child for 1 day, put him back in the class, put my son back in the class, and didn't tell us about the victim and the offender being in the same class together. I and my ex-wife, you know, went to the school, told them, how could you do that? I'm a police officer. I said, I wouldn't dream of putting a victim in the same room of the offender. And they said, well, there's no preponderance of the evidence. And I said, oh, there certainly is. Did you play the message for the teacher to find out if she knows who it is? Well, they said, there's 180 students. How do you expect us to do that? I said, how about this? Here's an idea. Why don't you just play the video for the teacher of the class they share with? 30 students, and they will not do it. And I said, if my son were gay, which he's not, and if he were, so what? I said, if my son was black, gay, or a female, you would suspend this child, but you're going to do nothing. And I FOIA'd, and I'll finish here, I FOIA'd conversations, and one of the staff members said, my son should act like an adult and deal with it. Can you believe that? Downers Grove South. Great Thanks. People over there.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the call, Bill. Yeah, some of them probably aspire to the library board someday. Yeah, preponderance. Ooh, that's a big word for a child to say there, the administrators at Downers South. What's the difference? Downers North? You know what, though?
What?
You know why I live in Downers Grove? I mean, in this, for the sake of this vignette.
Yeah. Why?
You know why I live in Downers Grove?
No. Why do you live in Downers Grove?
Great schools. Schools are so good. You know, I live in Glen Ellyn.
Oh. Why do you live in Glen Ellyn?
The schools. Schools are great. Frank and Lamont.
Hey, good morning, gang. I call for the good people of Downers Grove to get together and do what we did in the 60s. Burn those library cards. Stand up for your rights. Burn them. Tear them up. Do whatever you have to protest. But burn those library cards.
Thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, I really am interested. I mean, hopefully we can get William Nineberg on the show to apologize for his sins against the identitarian mob. But
I hope the local news covers it tonight, but I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, it's one of these moments where all the talk about everything that's going on nationally, internationally, and then the barbarians are right there at your front door. And will you do anything about it? You want to know if there are signs of life, if there's reason for hope in Illinois or DuPage County, for that matter? Well, these are the sorts of events that you watch and you say, or participate in, even better, say, well, when where there was a moment to stand up for my neighbor who was being wronged publicly, and there was this clash of values, what kind of community are we going to be? Did I stand up? Did I see other people stand up? Did we put in the fight? Because if you don't put in the fight over this library board issue, then don't come back to us and say, how is Downers Grove represented by Marxists in Springfield and Washington, D.C.? What's happened to Illinois? What's happened to the suburbs? What's happened to DuPage County? You know what's happened. Instances like this where you let the other side run roughshod over decent people.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So there's legislation pending in the Tennessee legislature. It's already passed the Senate, heard on the House floor, will be heard this week on the House floor, that would allow for the arming of teachers in all Tennessee schools. Allow for, as we've seen in other states. It's not mandated. If you don't want to have a gun in your classroom or on your person, you don't have to.
Okay.
Allow for. Well, of course, the union organized opposition to this. Teachers' unions did. Parents of Covenant School survivors that opposed it were in Nashville lobbying the House to vote against it. Of course, some Nashville students walked out of class, headed to the steps of the Capitol to advocate against it, too. The usual collection of the timid, the sentimental, the Americans who would happily surrender their sovereignty to the state. It's a sad group. It's a pathetic group, really. And unfortunately includes people who should know better. But what you should know and what you have the courage to stand for are two different things. One Covenant School teacher who was there on that fateful day. Were you ever going to get that manifesto?
Oh, that's right. Still holding my breath for that, yes.
When the non-binary, trans-identifying shooter killed six people. A teacher spoke up against it. Here's her argument. See how persuasive you think it is.
As I reflect on this time, I simply cannot imagine how I could have pulled out a gun with 10 children underfoot and in my arms. I think of all the terrible things that it could have gone wrong had I had a gun. My job that day, in the face of such terror, was not to take down a killer who was carrying multiple firearms, including a military-style assault rifle. My job was to move my students to safety, secure the area, keep them calm so they would not cry or make a loud noise, comfort them, and reassure myself that trained law enforcement would do their job of taking out the threat as soon as possible.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What say you? It's not her job. She's just a teacher. That's why we have law enforcement. She is there to stay with and comfort the kids while waiting for law enforcement. She's not supposed to be, you know, big bad mama and be taking on, you know, gun-wielding domestic terrorists, right?
Well, gun ownership isn't for everybody, Dan. I can see, you know, as just being a substitute teacher that I was, and my sisters both teach. One teaches special ed kids, the other one preschoolers. I don't know. I mean, do you know that in my sister's classroom, they have lollipops? And I asked her, like, why do you have lollipops there? She's like, oh, that's if there's a gunman, the lollipops we give the kids right away so that they keep quiet. I'm like, oh, my God, that is such a sad commentary on our society. But I don't know. I just think certain teachers could handle it better than others. And
of course.
Yeah. And if kids are crawling all over them, then they're trying to get out their weapon. And I mean, that might scare them as much, if not more, than the gunman if the teacher's firing shots off. But the teacher's doing it to protect them. I get that. So I can see both sides on this one.
Joe in Naperville.
That teacher is an idiot. Nobody is telling her she has to do this. Okay, you know what? Instead, go stand there and be a human shield, and if you'd rather give your life for those kids and not fire a gun. This is for people that would want to do this. I'd rather have a teacher armed to give my children the highest probability of survival than have this moron teaching them.
Thanks for the call. Yeah.
Let's say you.
Well, I think that's the point that she's missing, that Joe made in no uncertain terms. You're not comfortable and you have no interest in learning how to defend yourself with a gun. Okay. I mean, it's not attendant to the job that you have to be, you have to have, you know, X number of hours training with a weapon so you're prepared to use it in a crisis situation. So on that day that you took the kids and you comforted them and you kept them quiet, okay. I mean, nobody's criticizing you for that. But no one is imposing upon you the responsibility that you don't want either. So it's a straw man argument. But maybe there was a teacher at Covenant School that is proficient in defending himself or herself, that would take it up, that didn't have 10 kids to look after. And so that's why you say allow, and then you leave it to the school and the supposed adults in charge to figure out what the program is going to be within the school, you know, in consultation with the parents and so on and so forth, so that everybody knows. I mean, is that so difficult to contemplate? It's like everything is so internalized. It will internalize this, too. You know, in a society today, maybe less so in Nashville, although Nashville is a Democrat-run town, too, by the way. Tennessee isn't as a state, but Nashville, any town over 300,000 people, is basically a catastrophe these days.
Yeah, because people from blue cities move there.
Well, it's a catastrophe because, well, yes, obviously the residents elevate the same sort of politicians that pursue the same sort of empty-headed policies. We just saw this in Memphis down the road with the cop who was killed after this guy that was involved in his murder and also died himself in the shootout was released by a Soros-funded prosecutor in Memphis last month after being picked up on weapons charges. But, you know, so again, and that's my point. That's where I was going, actually, is to say, in this day and age, particularly where big cities and increasingly the suburban suburbs around big cities that have been infected with that big city mentality, like Chicagoland, you're going to leave it up to the trained police to respond? And what happens in a situation where you have, like Uvalde?
Right. Oh, God. I mean, if a teacher was armed there, think of how many lives would have been saved.
But the point is that there is this default to say by so many people, and that teacher is a good example of being a bad example. I not only am willing and desirous of living on my knees, I'm also happy to die on my knees. The attitude of I am not going to live on my knees or die on my knees. You know, I'm dying standing up for the things that I believe in and in those moments where I do what I'm supposed to do in my professional capacity or just as a citizen of a free society. And that mentality is just lost. It's all this, you know, I want to be in a cocoon and I want to cocoon others. I mean, I understand kids, yes, but you have in that moment, I mean, the moral position is to be a human shield for the kids, is to do everything you can to defend the kids. That is the moral position. Not just Uvalde, don't forget about the officer Parkland.
Oh, that's right. He sat out there too. Peterson.
This is not to disparage law enforcement, but sometimes they drop the ball too. And, you know, in those moments, it's the old saying, whether you want to be held accountable for your own protection or not is not always your choice. So be prepared if that moment is foisted upon you, as it was at Covenant School and in so many other instances.
This is a great text message. Dan and Amy, even the thought of armed teachers is a deterrent.
Yeah, harden the target.
Yeah.
Ken, Grays Lake.
Good morning. We need to stop pretending and hoping that this won't happen and start treating our schools like the Israelis treat their schools. They're literally a camp under siege 24/7. Their schools are hardened. They have armed guards. And nobody shoots up their schools, not even Hezbollah. And the sooner we decide to start protecting our kids, the better off we'll be. And this nonsense about, well, we can't have armed guards or secure our schools because it would traumatize the children, that's nonsense. Kids don't go home and have nightmares about bursting into flames after a fire drill or because there's fire extinguishers and fire hoses in the school. They'll be fine if we have security and hardened buildings as well.
Thanks for the call, Ken. Well, and again, my point, too, about bringing up the environment today, where you have turnstile justice in big metropolitan areas with repeat offenders, repeat violent offenders let out again and again. Now, most obviously do turn out to be school shooters or mass murders. But it's just an environment that invites the criminal, the marginally connected to decency and reality, to do things they might not otherwise do if there were blaring disincentives for them to do it. Paul and Kerry.
You know, her stance is similar to all leftist policies, where it falls back on feel good. I will protect you from having fear, those children, while you are being slaughtered. It's similar to all their policies where we'll come up with the ideas. Now you just shut up and fall in line.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
That sound means it's time for In-Depth History with Frank, the history teacher from Arlington Heights, because there's nothing new in this world. It's just the history we don't know. One day removed from tax day. Frank, take it away.
Good morning. Yesterday, I mailed my income tax return with payment to the IRS. What a wonderful institution. Brought to you by Abraham Lincoln in 1862. Yes, honest old Abe, to finance the Civil War, gave us the IRS to collect the first income tax, which wasn't repealed until 1872. 2 decades later, though, the Democrats tried again and attached an income tax to the 1894 Wilson-Gorman tariff reduction, but that failed in the courts. The progressives, though, just pressed on, and it was actually a Republican Congress in 1909 that passed the 16th Amendment allowing an income tax, and it was ratified by the states in 1913, right before Woodrow Wilson took office, who then signed the first actual income tax bill, with the rates ranging from, get this, 1 to 7%. But then once the U.S. entered World War I, the top rate reached 77%, and we haven't really looked back. Coolidge got the top rate down to 25%. But FDR raised it to 63 and then 94% during World War II. It never got below 70% until the Reagan Revolution. 1913 also gave us another monster, the creature from Jekyll Island, also known as the Federal Reserve. Responsible for monetary policy, it has presided over a 99% decline in the dollar's value since 1913. It's also arguable that its meddling with interest rates over the last century has been the cause of many of our historical economic problems. Of course, what else would one expect from central planning? Today, it's become a digital wingman that partially finances massive deficits for what is now a fiscally insane Congress. Future anthropologists may someday wonder why so many economists worshipped it so much.
Very good, Frank. It's funny. Wilson-Gorman Tariff Reduction was the name of my high school band. It was a Bachman-Turner Overdrive tribute band. We killed with taking care of business back in the day. Yeah.
You know, I thought it, you know, I was out there in high school the same time as you, and there was a band called the Fordney McCumber Tariff Reduction. That was associated with the 1922 bill, so that, I thought, was you.
It was popular to name bands after. Yeah, it was popular back in our day to name bands after tariff-related legislation.
Yeah,
particularly in the suburbs. Yeah, it was a heady time. By the way, a good piece in the Babylon Bee for those interested. 18-year-old trying to file her taxes wishes her teachers had spent less time on poly, queer, trans theory. Yeah, very good. All right, Frank, very good. Thanks, as always, for giving us the history. We don't know, but should.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Boy, that National Security Councilman John Kirby has really become a disappointment. He's sort of shown his true colors during this administration. I know he's in a difficult position. I know he's got a job to do. But, you know, maybe at some point you have to say, you know, if you want to trot this line of propaganda out, then, you know, bring KJP out to as best she can to recite the preferred talking points, or resign or retire, have some self-respect. But it's clear that that John Kirby has traded in his self-respect for continuing in this post to whatever ends. I don't know. This exchange, though, a good example of what I'm talking about is this exchange with the with Peter Ducey on the issue of Iranian cash. You know, we played yesterday Tony Blinken on Meet the Press over the weekend, animatronic Anthony. You know, every dollar that Iran has is used to fund terrorism. Of course, Kristen Welker didn't follow up. Well, then why would we be unfreezing assets that they can use to finance terrorism and attacks like the one over the weekend in Israel? The obvious follow-up question. Peter Ducey asked it.
Now that we know that the Iranians do not listen to President Biden's public warnings, is there any regret here about unfreezing billions of dollars for Iranian leaders during the president's administration?
What unfreezing are you talking about?
He unfroze billions of dollars.
For Iranian leaders?
Yeah.
Really? I don't think so.
Okay,
so first of all,
it's for humanitarian purposes, but doesn't that...
But you don't believe me.
Well, doesn't that free up money for them to spend on other stuff? Where do you get the money for an unprecedented number of munitions to fire at Israel?
So first of all, I'm betting if they're sitting in Tehran, they're taking it seriously when President Biden says he's going to defend Israel. We put skin in the game, a whole heck of a lot of it,
yeah, one more,
and knocked almost everything out of the sky. So I'm betting they're taking it pretty seriously. And as for this this unfreezing, none of that fund, none of those funds, funds set up in an account, by the way, by the previous administration, goes directly to the supreme leader of the IRGC, can only be used for humanitarian purposes, and we're watching that account very, very closely to make sure that that's what happens.
Yeah,
we're spend their money, huh?
We're a custodian on the mullah's accounts. Sure you are. I mean, honestly, the things that they want you to believe. First of all, just setting aside the unfreezing of assets, the biggest piece of this is the hamstringing of the American energy sector and the enriching of Iran and Russia through our energy policies. That's in the tens, it can combine hundreds of billions of dollars in newfound cash for Iran and Russia, thanks to the Biden administration's energy policy. Now, when it comes to unfreezing, September of last year, $6 billion, part of the prisoner swap, you'll remember, moved into this humanitarian restricted fund. And we have a look-see on that, or as Ducey properly pointed out, you know, there is opportunity costs. Money is fungible. What I have $6 billion to do over here frees up $6 billion over here. That's pretty straightforward. I think most people can understand that. But over the last 3 years, you know, excluding the oil money, yeah, you're in the tens of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't include, lest we forget, the upwards of $150 billion of assets that were unfrozen when Iran was going to be our great partner in peace in the second term of the Joe Obama years. We're in the third term now, for those of you scoring at home. That was upwards of $150 billion. Remember the Iran nuclear deal, partner in peace, stabilize the region? Trump was the one who was going to take us to war with Iran because he was in the death throes of his regime and gosh knows what he'll do, the dangerous finger on the button, and so on and so forth. And here we are. Honestly, I don't know how John Kirby sleeps at night making statements like that. He knows better. This is all for the domestic political audience. So you're putting American lives on the line. You're subordinating the interests of Israel's existence to the loudest voices on the left in places like Dearborn, Michigan. And that's not me saying that. That's a Biden supporter saying it. His name is Michael Moore. You may have heard of him. A bit of a filmmaker.
Campaign is to basically save Biden from himself because of what he's done to support this massacre, to fund it, to be the bank for Israel in the slaughter of these people, that he is essentially guaranteeing that thousands and thousands of Americans are going to stay home and not vote on election day because they're not going to vote for Trump. But this is how Trump could win. Because that 150,000 he won by in 2020, Hillary lost Michigan by just 11,000 votes.
Yeah.
That's two votes on average, two votes per precinct in Michigan. That's it. That's how close this could be. What it means actually to me personally is that now I've got to double and quadruple my efforts to make sure Trump loses because Biden is working against me. Biden is working.
Right. Even as Biden, you know, I mean, he's in the proverbial middle of the road, getting hit by traffic going both ways.
Right.
He's not sufficiently radical enough for the pro Hamas, pro Hezbollah, pro Iran cadre within his party. And he at least he shouldn't be. He is not sufficient. I mean, in terms of our interests as a country, he is not sufficiently supportive of Israel eradicating a terrorist organization like Hamas and fighting back against their sponsors like the state of Iran. As to taking the win, take the win. Joe Biden's handy advice to Bibi, which presented a pause, but just a pause in terms of any Israeli response to the Iranian attack over the weekend. That pause may be coming to an end a lot sooner than the big guy, Mr. 10%, would like. In point of fact, AP is reporting that Israel's military chief says that Israel will respond to this weekend's missile attack, that they're not going to agree with Iran and, hey, it's a tie now. No, Iran weakened itself and Israel should take advantage. And as we talked about with Steve Bucci yesterday, perhaps the greatest advantage it could take right now is to refocus on Rafah and do their best to finish the job on Hamas. Not take the win, finish the job. Yeah. How about that?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also text us 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And everybody was celebrating from, you know, when they shut everything down from coast to coast yesterday with the protesters and O'Hare and the Golden Gate Bridge and Brooklyn Bridge. They were all celebrating that Iran had a missile strike against Israel, even though it wasn't effective and nobody died, thank goodness. But that was part of their chance yesterday.
Pete and Elburn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I want to go back to that soundbite from Kirby. Like, somebody needs to go back to spokesman school. Who talks like that? I'm betting this and I'm betting that. He sounds like the guy at the end of the bar.
No, he cut out. Sounds like the guy at the end of the bar. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
terrible.
Pete. You cut out. Yeah, he sounds like the guy at the end of the bar. Go ahead.
Yeah, he sounds like the guy at the end of the bar. I'm betting this and I'm betting that. Like, we got to get the bartender to settle the argument. I mean, this is real
this is real life stuff. This is crazy. Lives are at stake, and those are the kind of answers they're given at the White House.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Right, and by the way, the bartender's going to need to settle it because John Kirby may be betting that the that Tehran is taking Biden seriously, but I'm betting they're not, which is why you had the Hamas attack on October, Iranian-backed Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th, and everything else that's transpired since. They are not taking him seriously. No one is, and particularly our enemies. Also, this from Walter Russell Mead, noted geopolitical expert and, you know, a longtime academic who writes in the Journal. Iran shouldn't take the win against Iraq. As the world waits on tenterhooks for Israel's response, two things seem clear. It would be political suicide for Netanyahu to take the president's advice. And it would be national suicide for any Israeli prime minister to do so. Biden is primarily worried about his reelection, a cause he conveniently, if sincerely, conflates with the survival of democracy. Israel is worried about something more tangible, the survival of the world's only Jewish state. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing you have to make sure to keep in mind. What interests are each of these heads of state trying to serve? There's a political component to both, to be sure. But the survival of America is not on the line here when it comes to the attacks on Israel. That is not the case for Israel, as Walter Russell Mead points out in no uncertain terms. And it's just a sad commentary on the political leadership of this country, so much of it, at least, and, of course, the Associated Press Corps, that that important distinction is not being driven with more clarity, because it makes the choices in this discussion very easy, no matter how loud these pro-Hamas protesters get. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You know that teacher, that black teacher that hugged Trump at the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
I think she's an instructor at one of the HBCUs in the greater Atlanta area. Anyway, she went on Fox and Friends to talk about that hug. Her name is Michaela Montgomery. And she explained why she hugged Trump and what the real deal is with at least some black Americans and Trump. Take a listen.
Of course, in the excitement of everything, I wasn't able to really relay my message. Yeah. But the general consensus or social media would have you thinking that if President Trump were to show up to the HBCU campuses or walk around the AUC community, that like some angry mob would form or a riot would ensue and that he would not be welcomed. And clearly the sentiment in that room the other day was the complete opposite. He was very welcome. People were excited to see him. People showed up in support of him. And people, of course, were from all four institutions within the AUC, the local HBCU community in Atlanta. And they all showed up in support of him. So it's actually kind of crazy to see people in an uproar when all four institutions were legitimately represented and all four institutions were represented by said students who wanted to support President Trump.
You know, Michaela.
And I appreciate that we were able to not only let him know that regardless of what social media says, you know, I know they're trying to make us think we're supposed to hate you, but we don't. And additionally, it was a learning experience for my students because they were able to see and experience firsthand how the media can warp the perception of an opinion or a person. Because, like I said, to think that these students who attend these illustrious institutions aren't smart enough to make their own decisions,
that's
so
right.
Much so that they would only show support for Trump because he bought chicken sandwiches and milkshakes.
It's offensive.
That in itself is the most disturbing part of it all, especially when you think about the fact that it was mainly urban media outlets that were doing everything in their power to turn other black people against these young black kids who simply were not shy to explore other options.
It's interesting. It's getting interesting. Something
left definitely went after and called her a plant. Like she's supposed to be there because, you know, they're so shocked when a black person loves Trump. It's like
something.
Something
may be afoot. I saw a recent battleground state survey that has him up 7 points in Georgia.
Awesome.
I mean, so again, we're very, very, very early. A lot's going to transpire, but poll after poll shows historic levels of support from black Americans for a Republican presidential candidate, at least in the last 50 years. And I'm not sure that there isn't some stickiness to those numbers. And like I said, if Trump is above 20% of the black vote,
he wins.
I mean, there's no way he loses legitimately. Let me put it that way.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer
on AM 560. The Answer.
Insert Democrat socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. Gang. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That theme music means it's time for our weekly conversation with Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. Before we get to Ted, I want to just update this story.
What, another birthday announcement?
No. About one of the most small-minded communities in the country.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's where Ted lives, shockingly. Wilmette. Of course, I'm talking about Wilmette. Did I even need to say the name? Wilmette.
What have they done now?
Big fight over banners in Wilmette.
Banners?
Although I do have to say, despite Wilmette being one of the most small-minded communities in the Western world, and despite the fact that I think the whole place should be razed and turned into a wind farm, there are the few people left that do believe in sort of the founding principles of this nation, free societies generally, mm-hmm. actual peaceful pluralists, as opposed to their elected officials. And by definition, most of the residents who elevate these people to positions of public office. There is more fight in Wilmette being offered by those who do believe in free society than in a lot of other communities that are similarly under siege, but haven't completely capitulated to totalitarian groupthink in the way that these overeducated simpletons, oxymoron, not really, the way these overeducated simpletons, these barbarians in Wilmette have. This fight is about flags, but it's indicative. It's indicative of a larger point.
Are these the banners that hang on the city streets? Like,
yeah. So, Progress Pride flags. It's almost Progress Pride flags in Wilmette. Progress Pride flag season in Wilmette, which is okay. Most of the year. I mean, I understand from Wilmette's point of view, 145 days on the calendar devoted to LGBTQ2S+++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++ So there was a proposal by representatives of or members of Nutri Neighbors. I don't know if they did it under that banner, as it were, but that's who provides most of the substantive pushback to actually post religious freedom flags. Not in place of, but in including, sort of like the Nutrier High School We Hate White People seminar they used to do. Right. And then the proposal was, no, you keep your racist lineup for your little I Hate White People Day. That's fine. But could you just add some thinkers that don't hate white people but are also Black Americans, like, you know, the works of a Thomas Sowell and a Walter Williams and Shelby Steele and others. And the idea of including a diversity of opinion ended I Hate White People Day at New Trier High School. So I think it's sort of the same philosophy. How about just including a hat tip to religious freedom? Oh, no. Religious freedom? No, no. Can't do that. So there's a bit of a row over that. You can understand why, because speaking of libraries, as we were earlier this show with the that honky on the Downers Grove Library Board, who is facing excommunication for, among other crimes against humanity, not posting his preferred pronouns on the library's website. The Wilmette Public Library, in conjunction with the parent-teacher organization at McKenzie Elementary School, co-hosting a seminar to teach children to consider cross-dressing or sex change surgery and how to lobby their fellow students to refer to them with their preferred pronouns. The seminar includes the co-authors of A Kid's Book About Pronouns, a doctor. Oh, a doctor. Nice get. Dr. Courtney Wells and Lee Wells. It's Friday, April 26, 5 p.m. Courtney and Lee Wells are lesbians who are married and live in Chicago, and that's wonderful. They're committed to justice and inclusivity for their own and all kids as long as you agree with them. That's where their inclusivity ends, with those who disagree. Courtney's an award-winning trauma psychologist. Of course she is. Is focused on dismantling the gender binary. Finally, Lee is a therapist working with LGBTQIA2S++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++++ the pronoun event of the season in Wilmette. You don't want to miss it. Hmm. Yeah. Oh, unrelated, the cast report out of UK saying all this promotion of trans-forming kids is destructive. It's not helpful. That's why they're moving away from puberty blockers, much less mutilation in England. And the Supreme Court just upheld the state of Ohio's, the state of Idaho's ban on trans-forming kids, including mutilating them. But hey, we're not Idaho and we're not the UK. We're Wilmette. We know better. For more on this and other related issues, Ted, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. And thanks for covering this this important issue in my hometown.
Yes.
Yeah, so what's it like? Are people outraged on the streets of Wilmette?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, it's I don't think you're seeing that, but Dan's covered it pretty well. And just as a FYI, this was a Nutrier Neighbors effort, and I happen to be on that board. And so I'm engaged with the team. And
Have you guys been banned from Walker Brothers yet for your impertinence and your opposition to officially sanctioned position for the community?
We just stay in our homes all day, Dan. And
there you go.
Problems. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty interesting thing because, you know, if you come to Wilmette, as you say, you'll see, pride flags flying all the time. And there's a lot of people who have a lot of problem with that for many reasons, some over what you just mentioned, that it's damaging the whole transgender movement for young kids. It's damaging and destructive for their bodies or psyche, et cetera. So there's a big pushback. But there's also the other side of things where we just want to see some balance in Wilmette. And so, yeah, let's keep flying your pride flag, but let's make sure we also fly a religious freedom flag. And, religious freedom, who can be against that, right? That's in the Constitution. But, of course, the pushback from the city was, well, and I love this line that the guy who responded to it said, we have a longstanding practice and policy that banner displays in Wilmette are government speech. We do not invite or accept displays from the public. He's defending government speech, and they're going to decide what to say. And some of the impetus for the pushback is what happened in Boston, where the city of Boston was flying all kinds of different flags, at the request of the public, but they refused to fly a religious flag. That made it to the Supreme Court, and the city of Boston got fined. And so really what we have to get to is, you know, we can't have these cities, these government bureaucrats deciding what they're going to put up and not put up that suit their political whatever needs, wants, desires at the expense of the public and the expense of free speech. So this needs to become a much bigger deal. I think this needs to have huge attention, because they can't say something like that where they're going to have government speech and deny the people a free speech.
You know, the founding documents were written by slave owners, Ted. They're not in force in Wilmette. It's in a more enlightened place. Speaking of which, I did want to mention this, too, before we forget, because I know that this is, you know, one of the small minded places in the Western world. And yet it's also advertised as one of the most tolerant. And yet I note that Holocaust Remembrance Day also got the thumbs down from New Trier Township High School. Holocaust Remembrance Day. That's a pretty significant Jewish population on the North Shore, including the New Trier School District. Holocaust Remembrance Day, thumbs down? Thumbs down from New Trier?
Yeah, you know, it's where is this inclusivity, right? And so this was a big deal, too, because there was a whole planned activity for remembering the Holocaust. And some of it was done, but some of it was shot down. The question was it done by the DEI people at the at New Trier? The superintendent says he did it all on his own. It wasn't the DEI group, but people
oh,
don't
good.
Buy it.
Oh, good.
And
I love the ownership. I love the ownership. That's Paul Sally, right?
It was the
Dickensian name Paul Sally, because he's a Sally, all right. So that's great. I just wanted to make sure I got that right, because for those who are not anti-Semitic, anti-Catholic bigots, you know, like most of Wilmette, not hate mongering, ignorant, anti-organized religion. I mean, except for Muslim, I got it. Except for, you know, Islam. I get that they respect Islam, but not, you know, for Christians, Jews, that's no-go zones. I got that. But for those few, like, who may be not members of New Trier Neighbors, but may be interested to see, we've had them on before, but I wanted to make sure we mention that this coming Sunday, April 21st, 4 p.m., our friend Eli Steele will be screening his documentary, Killing America, at the AMC in Northbrook Court. The film exposes, as we've talked to him about, I've talked to him on my podcast about it too, exposes the explosion of anti-Semitism and racial hate that's permeated the California schools, the wealthy California schools, just as it has the wealthy North Shore schools like New Trier High School. I love the symmetry. Perfect timing, particularly since the October 7th terrorist attack by Hamas. So again, Sunday, April 21st at 4 p.m., the AMC in Northbrook Court. If you'd like to see a film that's documenting this, since New Trier High School, led by the anti-Semitic, Catholic bigoted, Christian hating Paul Sally and the rest of the power structure there, that's not something that they would platform. So I just wanted to make sure people knew.
Yeah, that's key, Dan. And by the way, so the good news is that, you know, part of the fight back is Parents Defending Education has been trying to get through FOIA exactly what happened at New Trier on this day of remembrance for the Holocaust. And New Trier saying, no, we can't give it to you. It's just too cumbersome, too onerous. And so they've filed a lawsuit. Parents Defending Education has filed a lawsuit to get this stuff out of them. So we'll see where that goes. But I think this is part of the pushback. I don't like to use these kind of terms, but it's war, and it's a cultural war, and we got to fight it. And it's got to be fairness. It's got to be two-sided. And our side doesn't try to shut down what they say. We just want to make sure that both sides are included, where their side shuts down any opposition. And it's, you know, they'll do anything they can. They'll use any means they can to shut down opposition.
Well, I wanted to move on to the $70 million in migrant funding that the city has to cough up. Apparently, Preckwinkle was twisting arms to help Mayor Johnson deliver on that $70 million. The city council is going to vote on it today. What do you see happening? What do you forecast?
Well, I mean, it's hard to see how it doesn't pass. I don't know of the specific votes, but know, they're stuck there, right? And there's a big opposition. You've seen Alderman Beal and others push back, and he's right. I mean, we are just cheating local residents, local Chicagoans, in favor of a bunch of illegal immigrants, and that's a real problem. You know, we're talking about crime on the streets, we're talking about homelessness, we're talking about all kinds of problems, and here we are doling out millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and it'll be billions to illegal immigrants who aren't part of this community. And the $70 million is just a small amount. I mean, that alone might cover what we're spending on education for these for the new children here.
I don't understand how in these trying times, with Tony Preckwinkle stepping up, with J.B. Pritzker stepping up, with Brandon Johnson stepping up, how Wilmette, I hate to go back to Wilmette, but not really, how Wilmette is not stepping up. I read a piece last week I mentioned that the village manager of Wilmette said that we can handle the, I can't remember exact words, I think he said something like we can handle the maids and the gardeners that we have in Wilmette right now. But if there were more people shipped up here from the border, we couldn't handle them. And I'm flabbergasted that Wilmette would have any restrictions on people from another country that are looking for a better life and just want to come to Wilmette for that better life. I can't believe that they would risk being known as an unwelcoming community.
Well, yeah, there's a big risk he took saying all that. Yeah, let's see where the pushback comes. But you know, there are a lot of buses coming to Wilmette. They load them up, they deboard at the Wilmette metro station, and they go right back into Chicago. And I think we've had 30 something recently. It's been a big number, but yeah, he's concerned now, and I'm not sure how that's going to fly in the face of the community.
Mm. Speaking of the community and the communities in Illinois, all of them are losing population. Just about every county in the state of Illinois I saw has lost population. But that doesn't square with what Jelly Belly Pritzker tells us, that Illinois is gaining population. It's attracting businesses. It's reducing tax burdens.
We're going to become a text hub.
Hub?
An IT hub, excuse me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's all, everything's coming up roses from what I understand from, you know, from the officials. And then I read these stories and I don't know what to think. It's like, it's almost they're not telling us the truth. Could that be?
Well, he's not honest about this. And, you know, this has been clear. The numbers every year show people leaving. We've documented it like crazy. The one thing that came out U.S. Census said it may have made an error. It was perhaps an error. They don't know until they run the full census. But even if it was an error, that this would be about, you know, 250,000 more people in Illinois. And that doesn't cover the losses that we're having. So even if you grant him that, it doesn't matter. You know, you're seeing Texas grew by 5 million people in the last decade. Miami by almost 3 million. You're having massive growth everywhere else. And here we are. You know, we're shrinking. Either we're shrinking a lot or shrinking some. But either way, we're shrinking. And by the way, we're shrinking more than every other state in the country. So, you know, maybe New York is competing with us. So it's a big problem, and it's happening in every single county almost. There's only six counties that grew out of the 102. So you're seeing all these places like Peoria and Decatur and Rockford, all of them struggling. Champaign, which is a university town, has been able to grow a little bit, but everybody else shrinking.
Ted Dabrowski, President of WirePoints, WirePoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. For as much attention that is being paid to pro-lifers when it comes to the abortion issue and its impact on the November election. The left is spitting up all over itself. I don't know if you've noticed. Doesn't get quite the attention for obvious reasons. But the Eva Peron of East Lansing, the good governor Gretchen Whitmer, had this to say.
Sorry, I said she's freshly Botoxed, by the
way. Had this to say about any limitations. Any limitations, since this is a state-by-state issue at present, any limitations you would support in the state of Michigan?
Should there be any limits on abortion after viability, which usually falls somewhere between 24 to 26 weeks?
Well, you know, the Roe standard did have that, and that's precisely what we've been fighting for. But
so you support that, Governor? Just to be clear, you would support some limitations after viability?
I would support the Roe standard becoming the law of the nation again. That's exactly where I'm at, and I know that's where most Americans are. But I'll also share with you, Kristen, I am not a doctor.
Not a doctor.
Oh, my God.
I support the Roe standard, whatever that is. I don't really know. But I have heard other people say it, and the president said that he wants to make Roe federal law. So that's what I support, too. I don't know the particulars. But, hey, look, I'm also not a doctor. Right. That's the way of, hey, look, I don't want to take a position on late term abortions, partial birth abortions, live birth abortions. I don't want to take positions on that. So I just sort of at the Roe standard, because everybody likes Roe, right? The Roe standard, you know, that standard, the standard thing that Biden keeps talking about. I'm for that. Oh, OK. All right, Governor. Very helpful. Bill Maher had Piers Morgan and columnist from the Financial Times on his program over the weekend. He had an unintentional but yet helpful moment of candor. Ghoulish as it is, at least it's honest. What an atheist says about abortion.
Not if you believe it's murder. You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing. Or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean so killing babies is okay in some states? Like, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left on when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women, people who aren't pro-life, pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that. What?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not
is
sure
that
really
not your position if you're pro-choice?
Isn't that mainly because you don't like children? I mean,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
No. I mean, but if you are, you said you're pro-choice. Mm. That's your position too.
Mm. Yeah, it is. It is.
Sorry, we won't miss you.
It's harsh, but it's your position. Yeah, it is. It's kind of murder. It kind of is, Bill Barr says. Yeah.
But he's okay with it.
I'm okay with it because I'm my own God and we won't miss you. And
a horrible thing to say.
Well, why is it? He's just being honest. That is transparently, that is nakedly the position. It's just nobody uses those terms because you have to dress up something ghoulish in flowery terms to make it palatable. Nobody wants to think they're as coarse as Bill Maher, but they're also not as honest as him, at least on this issue. Are they? For more on this, pleased to be joined by Marjorie Dannenfelser. She's the president of SBA, Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. Marjorie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, such a pleasure to be with you. I enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, that was quite a statement from Bill Maher. We appreciate him stripping off the veneer, don't we?
Yeah. I think we're supposed to be, think he's a real stud. He's so bold. He'll just say it like it is. And I think we're supposed to admire that. You could tell the crowd did. And it led to his guest saying, yep, that's my position. He said, yep, that's the position. It is extremely helpful. It reminds me of Christopher Hitchens, like, who would take us to the logical end, that if you are your own master of your own destiny and nobody else. Well, okay, these people are in my way. All those children are absolutely not purposed by anybody or any entity. They're just in our way. So clear them out, like the underbrush, the original founder of Planned Parenthood said. They're basically the underbrush of humanity.
Right. I mean, it's everything needs to be looked at through the lens of my interest, not anybody else's. And then, this is where
kids.
That goes.
Yeah. Yeah. All those special needs kids, those kids born into poverty, you know, they just are really useless and purposeless. They're commodity. Like, and on the other hand, if I really want them, maybe they're a good prop for me. And, you know, in reality, when you have a child, that is not how you view them, and he wouldn't either. It's just other people's children that you can have disdain for, you know, that don't look like you or have your abilities.
Well, how much do you think climate change is, you know, because when we were kids, I just remember saying, don't have too many kids because, we're going to overpopulate the planet.
Yeah, I think that is definitely still the case. Of course, that argument really doesn't work anymore because we're not replacing our population so that old people die without help and support, except for from the state. So the state has become our insurance policy for old age, not our children. So it is quite a moment. I thought it was really interesting what he said about, so what is this whole 15-week thing or any increment? You know, anything less than zero is inconsistent with your thinking. And I mean, I'd like to know what y'all think about this, but it seems to me that's what every human rights movement in this country did. They moved incrementally until everyone saw the people that we're talking about in abolition and in other stages. Those people we're talking about are not commodities, not products. They're human beings with rights that transcend what we have thought about them up until now.
Well, I mean, I agree. And you know, to the whole limitation, you know, you take what you can get that is politically feasible where you can get it in the furtherance of protecting life from conception to natural death. I mean, that's my view on it. You can't wave a wand and turn California into Texas or Illinois into Florida. So or frankly, the composition of the Congress or the presidency. So you have to, you know, in a free society, you have to fight these things out through elections and the legislative process. So, of course, I mean, he's being disingenuous. The people who are advocating for particular restrictions are saying this is how far we think we can advance the flag on this landscape, which is, you know, eminently reasonable and commonsensical.
Yeah. I mean, there are all the children standing on the railroad track, and you run over there and you pull as many off as you can. And then, but you definitely don't wait forever. Like, well, we can't save them all, so we might as well let them all just stand there until they get mowed down.
No.
I know that's a pretty brutal analogy, but it is basically the same. And it's consistent with knowing that they all have human dignity and should have equal protection under the law.
Well, so you wrote this piece. I know your position on Trump's position of leaving it to the states. So why is Trump wrong to say essentially, look, we got the justices that overturned bad law, that would be Roe, and the pro-life movement through organizations like American United for Life have been arguing in the courts for decades to overturn Roe, get this back to the states, and you fight it out in the states. And that's where we're at. So why would we want to federalize it again, federalize the issue, particularly when Joe Biden is trying to do that very thing? Why not federalism the issue by deferring to the states?
There are many things that are appropriate federalism issues, education. Most issues, actually, are better handled and the closest they are to the people. But there's some issues, and this has been the position of the pro-life movement since 1973. There are some issues that transcend boundaries and geography, and you get to the place where you are willing to communicate whether you live, shouldn't depend on where you live, and that we as a nation should at least be for a federal minimum standard. But I do want to be clear about Trump's position. Clearly, he is far the better candidate than Biden. And that is where I and my organization stand in terms of our work in the battleground states. It will be to keep Biden out next time around, because if he is elected, they've already federalized this issue. they've already got their bill that is way worse than the, quote, Whitmer Roe standard. Their bill doesn't even mention the unborn child, and their bill, called the Women's Health Protection Act, which is a misnomer, would wipe out every single pro-life protection, not just gestational limits, but information for women, parental notice, conditions in, under which abortions can and can't be delivered, given the health of the woman status. You know, so, but back to your question, it is a matter of human rights. Even in incrementalism under Lincoln, he was not pushing to have slavery in just a handful of states, and that would be fine, and let everybody figure it out for themselves. He believed in incrementalism in pursuit of a national standard, which was equal protection under the law for everyone.
Right. But I mean, if you put all your eggs in the federal basket, as it were, that's very high risk. I mean, if the idea is to advance the flag as far as you can in the direction of life, where you can.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So, I mean, if Biden wins, they get control of the House and the Senate. That's not completely unfathomable. Or if it doesn't happen this time around, but 4 years from now, then now you lose all of the states that are moving in the direction of life because you lost a national election one time.
Well, that is exactly what they're going to do. There is no if. That is their plan. That is why he has to be defeated and why we have to gain at least the Senate and hopefully the House and the Senate. That isn't my decision to put federalism in their hands. But and I would just say this. We are fighting state by state. It is the best and most grueling fight that we've ever had to fight for life, and each state being as ambitious, way beyond 15 weeks, 12 in Nebraska, North Carolina, heartbeat in Florida and Arizona, at conception in Alabama. These are states where, of course, you're not going to limit them to 15 weeks. The 15 weeks is just an argument for, I know we can't do it now, we don't have the vote, but we don't have a president, but just a federal minimum standard that's reasonable, that 47 out of 50 European nations already have. Even France has 14 weeks in its constitution. So, you know, and they've had forever to argue and come to consensus. We've had a year and a half, or almost 2 years.
Well, doesn't the fact we've only had a year and a half speak to restraint, though, and say, look, this is something that, look, what you just said about Europe is absolutely true, but it's not widely known. And we know from the survey data that, you know, there's overwhelming support for legalization, majority support, really super majority support for legalization. Now, restrictions gets into a whole nother discussion. But if you don't agree to legalization and then a discussion, yeah, then you're losing a lot of people, and you worry that, especially with 13 states having this issue on the ballot, that they federalize the issue and make it a referendum on this matter with sort of the binary, however disingenuous it is, the binary choice between legal and not legal. And then you haven't ceded the ground for that question to be victorious and, to be to go your direction. And so now you're, I mean, in other words, why don't we have that question, minimum standard, or that discussion, that debate, minimum standard post November 5? Why can't it wait?
Well, that would be perfectly fine. Two things. That would be perfectly fine. I just, we cannot see that this is the state's only position, that we don't have to have that now. But let me just say this. Trump, who I have known for the last, since 2015, we in the pro-life movement are great. We wouldn't even be having this discussion if it weren't for those justices and our helping him win in those battleground states. So yes, we've arrived. As soon as you arrive, arriving to the left means that he owns, and he does, and he's proud of it, and he should be. He owns Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade, of the overturn of Roe v. Wade.
Right.
And so that is the question of legalization or not. That is what he has to, they want to federalize it again. They're the ones on the left who are gonna overturn every pro-life protection. A 15-week as a contrast is a contrast that you pray for in politics, because 15 weeks doesn't please really that many people on the left and the right, but it pleases 70% in the middle. Yeah, because they basically want legalization, but they don't want that kind of legalization up until the end. So it's a contrast that works. But look, he's already said he's not doing it. And so what we have to do is defeat Biden to keep him from wiping out every single pro-life protection. And that is the long term, as you allude to, basically imply that it is the longer term, you know, hopefully not too long term, but it's a pro-life movement, and which is an ever growing group of people who are thinking deeply about this, where if it is a human right and not a matter of geography, we need to communicate that. And look at that person we're talking about, not a piece of trash, definitely intended for the world. And I think that's where that argument will lead to better policy prescriptions in the future.
Hey, Marjorie, I wanted to get your opinion because yesterday I'm sure you saw the Stop the World from Gaza protests and San Francisco, Chicago, at airports in San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle. I'm sure you saw it in New York as well. Those people were ticketed. I know that there was more than 50 arrested here just received tickets, but you have people who sit in front of an abortion clinic and they face 11 years in prison for criminal conspiracy against civil rights.
What an important point you just made. Yes. Yes. It really, that is not equal protection under the law. Equal protection of the right to protest in the First Amendment. They're not being equally protected. And certainly, I'm sorry to say, in your state, the state of Chicago, though you're national, I realize, but certain states, certain rights, that should never be the case. And that is why there is a bill that has had a lot of debate, but the president would never support. And that is basically those people that you're talking about on the pro-life side, protection of their rights. There is a young woman in the jail in Alexandria, Virginia, who managed to rescue the remains of children who had been aborted at the very end. And it's very obvious. I mean, they're fully formed children, five children, that were just close to being born. And because she rescued those remains and took a picture of them, she is still sitting in jail in Alexandria right now. And look at the contrast that you just made with just people getting tickets.
Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of SBA, Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. Marjorie, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Such a delight. I look forward to it again.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Inveterate drunk / Chicago Tribune reporter. He's really just a political hack who serves the interests of the power structure in Springfield and Chicago and has for, I don't know, decades. Talking about Rick Pearson. He was on with Wilmette talking. Well, he's on Wilmette talking to Winnetka in one of their programs. And since nobody watches it, we need to bring it to you. And he's talking about this investigation into, well, this call for an investigation into papers that I've been affiliated with. For the crime, according to the State Board of Elections, and inveterate drunk Rick Pearson, for the crime of publishing voter data, public voter data, the public voter file, the state voter file.
Right.
That's a public record.
Right. I mean, long before you came into the scene, I remember Warner Saunders talking about that, saying that's why he doesn't vote in primaries, because he doesn't want people to miscalculate. You know, he just wants to remain unbiased.
Yeah, but you have to see the state voter file, the way it's set up in this third world kleptocracy. Your only PACs are allowed to purchase the state voter file. Like through the PACs I've run over the years, I purchased the state voter file, and then I have people, you know, clean it up because there's so many inaccuracies. It's poorly managed by the state authorities, as should come as no surprise. But the political ruling class doesn't want just any old Tom, Dick, or Harry to get his hands on this public record. At the county level, any individual can go to the county. You go to DuPage County, get a copy of the voter file, pay for it. But at the state level, for the statewide voter file, you got to have a PAC. Pay for it. Well, this newspaper group got a hold of the state voter file. So it can be, you know, there's obviously any PAC in the state can purchase it, just like I have. So they got a hold of it from wherever they got a hold of it, and they published it. And now it's a hue and cry. State Board of Elections, the AG, please investigate this, and so on and so forth. Boy, I wonder if their posture was the same when it came to, like, when the New York Times obtains information, say, about Trump, I don't know, like a tax return, or Ken Griffin's tax return. The hue and cry from inveterate drunk Rick Pearson and those that are basically in service to Jelly Belly Pritzker and the State Board of Elections, because all these agencies are shills for the power structure that is, which is in this at this time is Chicago Democrat Socialists like Jelly Belly and Tony and the rest of them. Well, here's what Rick Pearson said about public voter data.
All right, some statewide news this week. Rick Pearson, the Illinois Attorney General, is going to investigate some of these so-called pink slime newspapers. These are, they look like really, you know, talks like a duck, squawks like a duck, but it's not a duck. These
it's
look like real
duck.
Newspapers, but they're thinly veiled propaganda outlets, usually for the right wing. They apparently publicize voter data without permission. So what's the AG going to investigate?
Well, these are those papers that a lot of people remember during election time that they showed up that they never subscribed.
They have names like West Cook News or something like that.
Cook Review, whatever.
Right.
And they're the work of one Brian Timpone, who was a former political operative and a former journalist in his own mind. he was former spokesman for the House Republican leaders a long time ago, and is being funded by various dark right-wing groups to do.
There's some U-line money in
there's
this.
There's U-line money.
And Dan Proft is behind it too.
And Dan Proft is a business ally of Timpone, mm-hmm. and he, of course, is very close to U-line as well. And Timpone recently explained that he's been trying to print voter data. He has pink slime papers all across the United States, something like 1,200 of them. And they're all trying to print voter data under the guise that, one, we all know that the election was, you know, stolen because of fraudulent voters. Of course not. It didn't happen. But this is part of that meme of trying to develop that mindset among voters. So they got a database. They're not supposed to. The voting rolls are not supposed to be public for non-political use. Birth dates, addresses, those kinds of things. There is a public voter database. It does not have the same information. They used one that was reserved for political use only and are now printing it in their various publications throughout the state. Part of it in some ways to shame people because it also lists if you didn't vote. And so this is all under this guise of, this is public service journalism. No, that's crap.
It's not even journalism.
It's not crap. It's printing a list and trying to fall into the masters of these pink slime publications.
And as we're seeing, it's potentially a breach of privacy here.
Absolutely.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. A public record, publishing a public record is a breach of privacy. It's a public record. I know maybe some people think it's a breach of privacy. It's like when people know about your the sale of your home and the details. Public record. The mortgage you have on your house, public record.
Right.
You don't want, but it's my private business. Well, it's maybe your private business, but it's also a public record.
Yeah.
And with respect to voter rolls, it's particularly important it's a public record, isn't it? Because what are the checks on free and fair elections if you don't have access to the public record? Or if just PACs are allowed to, political action committees, but not the private citizen. Why wouldn't the private citizen be able to access a public record in the same way that a PAC can? Otherwise, as was said by Chicago Contrarian on Twitter very well, otherwise, residents are simply to trust lawmakers, not to manipulate the data for their benefit. He's a political reporter for a newspaper, allegedly. I'll let you in quotation marks for both newspaper and political reporter. Talk about the real slime merchants working for the real pink slime outfits. No, of course. Of course, Rick Pearson and the Chicago Tribune just calls balls and strikes. That's a punchline. As we've said when we've covered this topic before, the difference between the papers they're talking about and the papers and the outlets they work for is the papers they're talking about, the Timpone papers that I've been connected to, are honest about their perspective and the angle at which they come when it comes to story selection and editorial content, to the extent there's editorial content in there from time to time. Whereas these other outlets, Wilmette Talking to Winnetka, the Tribune, the NPR Times, literally state-funded media, and the rest of the gaggle of the Chicago Press Corps and Springfield Political Press Corps, for the most part, are all reading from the same hymnal that was bought and paid for by J.B. Pritzker and fellow travelers prior to him of his political ilk, his ideological disposition. Pearson responded to that tweet saying, "Reporters don't do the agenda of dark money groups for their fantasies of stolen elections or illegally use voting lists to post personal identification. And then when it's done, publish lists filled with massive errors." Well, that's part of the point of the transparency, Rick. Publish lists filled with massive errors. They took the papers, took the voter file and published it. So what they're highlighting, and this is a journalistic endeavor that actually adds value to the public, is how error-filled the state voter file is. And anybody who's actually been in campaigns and had to rely on this sort of data, you do the cleanup of the raw file you get from the State Board of Elections because it is so error-filled. But we're supposed to trust them unquestioningly. They're beyond reproach. Only these participants in the political system shall have access to this information. Everybody else, you just trust the political operators, the politicians and their operatives. Why? What are you hiding? What are you so afraid of? Oh, my God, it has somebody's birth date on there. How invasive.
Where
well,
they live.
I can. Well, I can go to Cook County. And I can, as a private citizen, and get a copy of Warner Saunders' voter card tomorrow, or Amy Jacobson's, or anybody else's, as a private citizen. But I can't get it in aggregate.
I had to pull to find out when your birthday was.
I can get these individual records. That's okay. If you get the aggregate record, oh, now we are treading on hallowed ground. You're not. It's absurd. And this and so the Illinois piece is so funny because Pearson wants to nationalize to say, oh, you know, for their fantasies about stolen elections. Who's claiming a fantasy? Who's claiming a stolen election in Illinois? Not me. Did I ever claim that J.B. Pritzker stole the election from Darren Bailey? No, nobody else did either. I mean, the history of corruption in the administration of elections in Cook County and Jackson County, Illinois, for that matter, and Illinois, I mean, is legendary. But whatever, set that aside. Nobody's claiming stolen elections here. But Rick can't focus on the state issue. He has to reference it to claims of stolen elections because he doesn't want to address the substance of the issue and the fundamental question, which is why shouldn't individual citizens or press outlets have access to public information and publish it for the public's ease of use? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The oligarchy in Chicagolands continue to pull this stuff. How dare you get involved in playing their sandbox? We're always going to be relegated to the kids' table at Thanksgiving where the adults are making all the decisions. And until there's enough of a backlash and people get involved at the precinct level and get some white start winning some elections, they're going to continue to do this stuff. And it's incumbent upon people to take over the Republican Party from the bottom and inside out until you're going to change things.
Thanks, Kevin. Greg, Northwest Side.
Hey there, Dan. What kind of records are these? Are they 78s, 45s, or long play?
Zing.
Maybe we got a red record player and they want a blue one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Man, thanks for the call, Greg. The finger wagging in terms of the canons of journalism from inveterate drunk political hack of the left, Rick Pearson, is just so delicious. I mean, I just love it so much. I hope Rick Pearson never goes away. And so many other long-serving members of the Chicago and Springfield political press corps, who, by the way, have blood on their hands, as do the politicians, for the destruction of a once-great city and a once-great state, as I'm quick to remind people. So I never want them to go away. I hope Madigan and Burke, I don't want them to fade from memory. I want them to be remembered as principal parties to why you left Chicago, why you left Illinois, what has happened to this city and state. Rick Pearson's right up there. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, did you see this little incident at John Mellencamp show a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, he's getting old. Do you think he's got dementia or something? Or
no,
he's just
he doesn't
an
have
angry
dementia.
Man.
No, he's just an angry leftist. I mean, you expect that in entertainment. So you try to discount it and just focus on the artistry of the particular leftist in question. Mm-hmm. But when they force feed you the politics, some people get a little ornery, understandably. So when Mellencamp had a recent show, was prattling on about Biden, somebody yelled out, just like one guy yelled out, just play music.
Yeah.
And he
shut up and dribble.
He's a little cranky now that he's in his 70s. Old Johnny Cougar. He had a bit of a snit.
Yeah, real quiet.
No.
Oh, now you done it.
What do you think I'm in, you sucker? Now here's the thing, man. You don't know me. You don't know me.
Yeah, you're John Mellencamp. You sing songs. I know you.
Hey, Joe, find this guy and let me see him after the show. Guys, I can stop this show right now and just go home.
No, don't do it.
Please,
no.
We love you.
Since you've been so wonderful, I'm going to cut about 10 songs out of the show.
No, don't punish us.
I'm going to do it. Back, Jack, Diane.
Everybody takes a smile.
Show's over.
Oh my God.
And they walked off stage.
What? You can't. A gig is a gig. And they paid for the tickets to see him perform. I would demand my money back.
I like the whole, too, like Johnny Cougar with his little hey, Bob, get that guy and tell him to meet me backstage. A 72-year-old, 5'2", little. Hey, sure.
He's got to cut on him now.
You want to meet me backstage? Yeah, sure.
You want a piece of this? You want a piece of me?
What are you
going
to do?
You want to go?
Oh, man. But fragile, very fragile senior citizens on the left like Johnny Cougar. Yeah, walked off stage. So, I don't know. Just factor that in if you go see one of probably what will be a last round of John Mellencamp show. He's very touchy. So if you provide any pushback to any political speechifying he does, just be prepared to call it a night early.
All right. Phew.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.